Good morning, Rabbi Isai. Our limud of halacha every day is a zchus for the refuah of Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, Hishtava Refuah Shleima. I had a message from him yesterday that he's in America for Yom Tov because he has to be there for further treatment, but he says Baruch Hashem is doing well. Hishtava Refuah Shleima Bekorev. So, we're all trying to eat our three sudas on this Erev Shabbos. This Erev Shabbos is Erev Pesach, and we can't eat bread. We can't eat matzah. We can't eat matzah because it's Erev Pesach. And we already discussed why we can't eat matzah on Friday night. So we're not eating matzah, but we want to be Mekayim Sholosh Sudos. Lechatchila, it's better to have pas for the third meal. Right? There are some people who are not makpid. In Halacha it says that b'dieved, if you don't eat pas, then you can have mazonos. If you don't have mazonos, you can be yotze with fruit. Litvak zung namaken yetze zamitera. I don't know whether they mean mom is shal shudas, but lemaisa, there was a minig by the litvakas that they had a shear between milch and marv. So lemaisa, we're trying to do the lachatchila, but there's a tata de sasra here. There's a bit of a contradiction. What do people do? They have to. If you want to make the sholosh sudas, the sudas shlishis on bread, then you have to do that and finish eating by 10:07 in the morning. So what do? They split the meal into two. And there's a whole problem exactly how you split the meal into two. Brocha shena tzricha, how do you make the break? But you daven very early, you get home, you wash, you eat hamoitzi, you eat bread, yeah? You eat hamoitzi with a piece of fish or whatever it is, and then you bench, and then you make a break. Exactly what the break is, your Rav will guide you. Some people say you have to go for a walk around the block. Some people say it's enough if you go, so you wait for half an hour. There's dais. And then you wash again, and then you have your second meal, which is your Suda Shlishis. But the problem is that there are a lot of poskim who hold that you can't be yoitza the Suda Shlishis in the morning. You can only be yoitza the Suda Shlishis in the afternoon. In which case, what you've done in the morning at your third Suda was unnecessary because you haven't been yoitza Suda Shlishis. So therefore, we all end up doing four Sudas. In other words, we wash in the morning twice, we have two Sudas in the morning and finish eating our bread by 10:07 in the morning, and then one learns, rests, whatever you're going to be doing. Can't make any hachonas for Yom Tov. Shabbos afternoon, and then Shabbos afternoon, people probably have a rest, and then they eat another shalosh sudas. But this time, obviously, they can't eat pas, they can't eat chometz bread anymore, and you can't eat matzah anymore. So therefore, you can only be yotze. If you brok, then you can have mazonos, then you can eat cake and things like that. If you don't brok, then you have to be yotze with fruit or fish or fish or meat or anything like that. Fruit, vegetables, anything, food that's been cooked. If you've got a cholent, a Pesach tikka cholent on the boil, then you can have a hot meal as well. So that's effectively what we do. We have shalosh sudas twice. Those people who are makpid. Somebody who's not makpid the whole year round on shalosh sudas to wash. Someone who regularly, if he's in shul, maybe he washes for shalosh sudas. But if he's at home, he's yotze taka with mazonos, or he's yotze with peiros a whole year round, then he doesn't have to be makpid in the morning on Shabbos morning this week to wash twice and to make the second Suda. It's very nice if he does, and it's lechatchila to have two Sudas from past, but he doesn't have to because he's not makpid. He doesn't usually have shalosh sudas dafka with pas. But if you want to do the lechatchila, or those people have a minig that they do pas a whole year round, then we wash twice in the morning, and then we have another shalosh sudas in the afternoon from the bedieved materials, i.e. mazonos, if people have got mazonos, or if they haven't got mazonos because they don't brok, then peiros, fruit, vegetables, cheese, meat, whatever it is. Not the meat and the cheese together.
Now we go through in Northwest London, Tuesday, Yud Nissan, 8th of April. Rabbi Malcolm Herman Schlieter, Ideas for Seder Night Table. This week's Torah been sponsored by Family Strong, the Chutzimah Sabar Mitzvah of Avraham is Strong. Yerosa and Shinisku, Horo, Shemos, Rav Nachas, Sinenu, for your Tech, and Sinem, the Spus, Sashvim, and Afaylim, and the Kamosh, and Sulu, and the Shalom, Bim, and Hero.
Good morning. So I'm going to share some ideas for Saturday night. I've got two versions of this. The slightly longer version, and a bit more child-centered, is on Torah Anytime. This is a little bit more adult-centered, but some interesting discussion points as well. So, I want to start off actually with an idea, a beautiful mashal. Actually, I do have a prop for this. I quite like my props, brings things alive. I didn't bring it in, but basically, imagine if you had came to a crossroads, a four-way crossroads, and the crossroads had collapsed. And in the days before Google Maps and Waze and all those types of things, I might have to remind some of those people around the table that there were days before Google Maps and Waze. You get to the crossroads, and the challenge is, it's a brain teaser, how can you work out where to go? You've got a four-way crossroads that's collapsed on the ground, there's a big hole in the ground, you can't work out from the hole how to put it back up, there's nobody else to ask, how do you work out which way to go? Suggestions?
The way you came from.
Very good. Put it the way you came from. If you put it the way you came from, if you point it towards the way you came from, then you know where you're going. It's a four-way crossroads, it's collapsed,
yes.
But you know where you've come from. Yes. So you know you've come, that will help you to reorientate the crossroads in the right direction. Once you've worked out where you've come from, you know where you're going. So it's a good marshal, it's from the one in Bali Musa, I don't remember which one. I heard it at a simple recently. I thought it was a great introduction for Satan Night. Because if you know where you come from, you know where you're going. And that is the whole essence of Satan Night. To know where we come from, then it allows us to know where we're going. And the whole of Satan Night, Satan Sitzer Shaim, gives us the very beginnings of where we've come from as a people. I saw in the name of the Chaim Mitzans, on the Friday Night Kiddush, we say, Tzachila Lemikroi Kodesh, Zecha Litzitzer Shaim. The Tzachila, the start off of any ascent in Kodesh, is Zecha Litzitzer Shaim. Even if a person is in a place where they don't feel necessarily spiritually inspired, but it's a good place to start. Know where you come from and you know where you're going. So, and that's, you know, in today's age where people are rewriting history in one form or another, that's a very bad thing because you're destroying the past. If you destroy the past, then you lose your ability to calibrate the future. Avodah Meyinu. So I want to say a vort, which I think is a well-known vort, but I'm not so sure, and it's a very good diuk. So everybody quotes in Avodah Meyinu that we'd still be slaves to Paran Mitzrayim, and everybody asks the Kasha that we wouldn't still be slaves, slaves have been released. Of course, in the Hebrew, it doesn't quite say that. In the Hebrew, it starts off with Avodah Meyinu, and then it says, Harianu, Vanenu, Vanevanenu, Mushu Bodim Meyinu, the Fad Mitzrayim. This is a well-known vort. Came to Avodah Meyinu, Mushu Bodim. What?
Yeah, you might be saying something else.
Avodim means slaves. Mushubodim, we know from Gemara. Mushubod means you will be collateral to, you'd be enslaved to Paran Mitzrayim. Not we'd actually be slaves. If Hashem had not taken us out, Mitzrayim to you, then our identity would have been tied up to Mitzrayim, and people would have said, you know who that guy is? That guy was the old slave. He's the old slave, the old slave. So I think it's a good, interesting point on Satan Light to discuss what would that mean? We'd be enslaved to Paran Mitzrayim. Now, it finishes off this paragraph, as very well known, that even if we're all wise, mitzvah aleinu l'safek b'yetzias Mitzrayim. So certainly if there are adults around the table, teenagers around the table, I think it's a really important opportunity to discuss, and this is based on the Shem Shmuel, what exactly does emunah mean? What are the components of emunah? What are the components of emunah? We know Hashem created, and what are the components of their emunah? And there's at least three or four things to identify. Within the Sheish Chiros, you've got the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no component parts, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't share power with anything else. We've got the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has shlita on the world down here, not just in terms of knowledge, but in terms of control. We'll see, I think it's an opportunity over here to bring out, to flesh out, what exactly does emunah mean? To really understand what exactly does emunah mean. Why is it important? Because first of all, the mitzvah of the night is to absorb and inculcate emunah. But we'll see when it comes back to the makos, it's a great opportunity to link the whole seder together by coming back to that from the makos. But I saw from the Shem Shmuel that if you think about it, that the pinnacle of emunah is really to get to a place where a person can feel in every aspect of their being, Ein Od Mevada. That's the pinnacle of emunah. A person can feel in every aspect of their being, Ein Od Mevada, there's nothing else other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the noise of the huha. Nothing else, right? Ein Od Mevada. Now, and that is really the pinnacle. If we had to pick one line of all that we have to express the concept of Ein Od Mevada, what line would that be? From davening. The Shema. In the Shema. Says the Shem Yishmuel and his son Chaste David, and this gives us a very beautiful understanding of the sequence of the Haggadah now. Because what happens next is, there's something in Menei Barak. and sitting in there about the whole night long, until it got to the point, they went, "Hey, Rabbi Sinu, he gives the man Kriya Shema Shel Shachris." Says the Shemesh Mool, as well as the standard Peshat, when they went through the whole night, until they got to the moment when it needed to be said, it's not just telling you how they did Seder, it's telling you the point at which they reached in their Seder. They absorbed their Munah in such a way, they got to the point, they were ready to say Shema, with the best Munahs that they could to say Shema. And what's a beautiful idea, or there's the Chassid David, puts it slightly differently, when he talks about Leiv and Moyach, that we in the evening we say Emes v'Munah, well known bot, in the morning we say Emes v'Yatziv, in the evening sometimes life isn't so clear, in the evening our relationship with Hashem isn't so clear, in the morning it's Emes v'Yatziv, they got to a point where they could say Shema with Emes v'Yatziv. This was demonstrated how far they went and how deep their Munah became with through the process of Sifat Yisrael. So now in the Baruch Shem after Chosel Israel, so we say Hakadosh Baruch Hu Kishev Es HaKeitz. Kishev Es HaKeitz. So I would ask you on the table, where else do we find the word Keitz? Where else do we find the word Keitz in the Torah? What? Keitz Kol Bosa. What? Parshas Miketz. Yeah. So let's pick out. Yeah. Parshas Miketz. The Novominska Rebbe brings that in the Medrash on Parshas Miketz, so it brings the pasuk from Eov, Keitz Som Lachoshech. Keitz Som Lachoshech. And he builds in a short maimah, but beautiful idea. And this tells us that really, in essence, there's supposed to be light. It's just the world is obscured by Choshech. But the natural state is light, and Keitz Som Lachoshech. And this is a big chizuk to know, that really there's supposed to be light. However, we are obscured, Golus makes the reality opaque, and there'll come a time where Keitz Som Lachoshech, all Hashem will need to do is remove the light, and remove the darkness, remove the cover, and then there'll be light. Now, I did think about quite a good prop over here to illustrate this, although I can't think of a health and safety way to do it. Right, which would be to take the Shabbos lamp, and to wrap around inside the Shabbos lamp some kind of beautiful picture of Yerushalayim, and the old style Shabbos lamps, and to show to those around the table that Be'etzem, living in Golus, the world is opaque, but as soon as the Kodesh Baruch Hu removes the darkness, then we will see Kimetzin Tetzera V'Hashem Yerushalayim. I'm still looking for a safe way of doing that. It would be quite a nice way of emphasizing this idea. But to add to this, very interesting kasha. We know that not all of Klal Yisrael made it out of Mitzrayim. In fact, Pashtus in the Medrash, 4/5 didn't make it out, although Shemesh Rab has another calculation about that 4/5, but Pashtus 4/5 didn't make it out. But there were two people that made it out of Mitzrayim, you would have expected, would have been left behind, and perhaps, who? Dasa Bar Miron, would have been left behind, maybe even should have been left behind, right? So how did Dasa Bar Miron make it out of Mitzrayim? Anyone heard any directions to that? I never thought of the Kashas on this year, anyone?
Sorry.
What?
They were sorry missing.
Either they were sorry missing, and they took the hits for the others.
The Shechem Israel.
So this year, someone showed me a Pirush HaRosh, which is in the, I can't keep up with the latest fancy Mikras Gedolos, but in one of the super fancy deluxe 5-star Mikras Gedolos, there's a Pirush HaRosh where he says, amazing Loshen, why do they merit Gula? Shlo Nisiyai Shu Mila Gula. Their redeeming feature was they never gave up on redemption. Fascinating. Despite who they were, amazing chiddush. That lonely siyash from the gula, and it was that actually allowed them to be redeemed. The fact that they retained their hope in redemption. Now, I'm putting this together. So there's Keitz Som Lachoshech. We have to know that the darkness, there will come an end to the darkness. We've got to believe in that with every fibre of our being. Now, Novominska Rebbe also points out that if you look at the paragraph of Vehisha Amda, and this could be quite a discursive point in the Seder night, if you look at the paragraph of Vehisha Amda, what is Vehisha Amda? Everyone says Vehi is the promise of Baruch Shem after Chosel Yisrael. Now, Maisa, if you look at it carefully, the promise, but the statement of Vehisha Amda is in every generation, B'chol Dar V'Dar Omnim Lelin L'Chav HaSeinu. In the promise of Baruch Shem after Chosel Yisrael, there's no hint to that at all. It's interesting, I never noticed it until this year.
What?
No hint to the fact that the Kodesh Baruch Hu will protect us in future values.
So you're
showing
those for the past.
It's about, Baruch Omar is about the promise that Hashem made to Avraham Avinu and Bris Ben Abasarim. It makes no reference to Behold, Omador, Omni Molen, Lechalasenu. It references the past. It does not reference the future. Interesting horror. No? There's not reference to the past, isn't it? So the Novominsk Rebbe says that the Baal HaGod himself is teaching us an amazing Chiddush and an amazing Chizur. No, that promise of the past was that this will be the prototype for all Godless and Gaon in the future. And therefore, just as in Mitzrayim, a Kodesh Baruch Hu was there for us, and those who didn't give up hope of redemption were part of redemption, so too is the future. It's the Baal HaGod himself who's teaching us Pshat in the Bris Ben Abasarim. Interesting idea. The Baal HaGod himself is telling us, no, in the very Bris Ben Abasarim, where Avraham Avinu, even though it only talked about Godless Mitzrayim technically, the Godless Mitzrayim is the prototype. And therefore, if you understood that prototype, you understood what we're being, not just for that Godless, but for the future as well. So I want to share a story which actually is not from a Jewish source, so you can treat it as a moshul if you like, but it's done a little bit of research, appears to me a remarkable true story. And I'm focusing on this idea of pulling it all together. Okay, Som L'Choshech, there is reality is supposed to be light, not darkness. Just the darkness obscures us. What's the key to being part of that light is to believe in the Godless. And understand that Godless, believe in the Godless, sorry, and that Godless was promised to Avraham Avinu in the very beginning, as part of the very beginning. So in 1988, there was an earthquake in Armenia. I don't remember it. I haven't actually met anybody who remembers it, even though Rahman Lislan, 30,000 people died in a matter of minutes. 30,000 people died. And there was a man who had literally just dropped his son off at school a few minutes before the earthquake. Comes home, the earthquake strikes, and that Rahman al-Islam, the whole place is completely flattered. He turns around, goes back to the area of the school, and the school has been reduced to rubble completely. And Nebuch, I mean, he tries to work out exactly where his son might have been located, and he starts digging. Whatever he has with his bare hands, with a spade, he starts digging and digging. People come over to him and say, "You're a Meshuggah, what are you doing? You can't dig, the place has collapsed completely, there's no survivors anymore. You can't dig." He said, "Listen, every night before I put my son to bed, I said to him, son, I'll always be there for you. I will always be there for you. And I said it to him last night. I can't not dig. I said it to him last night. I can't not dig." So he keeps digging for 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours. He digs for a full 38 hours. After 38 hours, he suddenly hears voices from below the rubble. And his son and 13 friends had actually been caught in like an air bubble of some sort. The way the building had collapsed, and it created some kind of shelter for them, and they were safe. So he calls out to his son, "Look, I've created an opening. Come out." The son says to him, "No, let my friends come out first, because you made me a promise you'd always be there for me. You made me a promise you'd always be there for me. So even if I let them out first, I know you'll always be there for me." It's a beautiful mashal for Seder. Beautiful mashal from this point of the Seder. To know 100% that Kodesh Baruch Hu is there for us. Despite the difficulties of Klal Yisrael, particularly in the moment, Hashem is always there for us. And to have that as part of our emunah, part of what we reinforce on Seder night, of which Mitzrayim was the prototype. Okay, then we come to the various Pesukim, Arami Ovid, the four Pesukim that detail how we got down to Mitzrayim, what we were doing, how we got enslaved, how we cried out to Hashem, and Hashem brought us out. So, I want to share with you a very fascinating idea. Here's the first time, I think, in the Haggadah, where we talk about the case of Chol Bechor Reis Mitzrayim. Chol Bechor. It's amazing, and again, around my Seder night table, I would conduct this as a discussion. How strongly Bechor features in Yiddishkeit. How strongly Bechor features. So we've got, first of all, Klal Yisrael themselves. Can you hear me in the back? No. Klal Yisrael themselves.
Sorry
if you missed the first half. For those who came in a bit late, I've got an expanded version of this with more ideas for children on Torah anytime. But Klal Yisrael themselves are referred to as B'nai Bechor Yisrael. Klal Yisrael themselves. Secondly, of course, there's so many mitzvahs appertaining to Bechor. There's Pidgin Bechor, there's Pesach Hamor, so many mitzvahs appertaining to Bechor. Thirdly, and perhaps the one that I've always been most puzzled about, is it features in one of the parashas in Tefillin. Bechor features. Fourthly, the climax of all the Makkas was Makkas Bochoras. So it's a very original and creative machana called Rabbi David Foreman. Some of you may have come across him. He wrote a book called The Exodus You Almost Passed Over. It's a rather intriguing book, and a whole analysis of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And within that, he has the following idea, which I really thought was a beautiful trap. It says, in every generation, by definition, parent to child, there's a generation gap. By definition. I remember when I took, and again, around my Seder night table, it's an opportunity for a bit of a discussion. And then, do you remember what we had when we were kids? You didn't have that, to highlight the concept of generation gap. I remember we once took our kids to the science museum, and they saw a typewriter there, where you typed, and the printing went straight onto the paper. And it was an amazing idea. I mean, you mess around with a separate printer, which gets boingers with you half the time. You type straight onto the paper, beautiful idea. Generation gap. So by definition, there's a challenge from one generation to communicate to the next generation. B'miuchad values is a challenge. So, he says as follows, the Bechor functions as a bridge between the parents and the child. Why? Because first of all, the Bechor is the oldest, and therefore closest in age to the children, to the parents. On the other hand, the Bechor is also the role model. A Bechor that does their role well is the role model for the rest of the children. Therefore, the Bechor functions as a bridge between the parents and the child. He actually notes in his footnotes, I think he bases it on a footnote, that the word for a father is aleph, which becomes base. Right? First I was one, right? And now, with children, you become base. Interesting. So one becomes two. The word for bechor is a very interesting word, because each of those letters is 2, 20, and 200. 2, 20, and 200. And it was expressing the idea that the bechor is the one who... What? Okay, you can make it without them off. Between friends, we'll...
You ruined it.
With a vav, okay? But the essence of the word without the vav, interesting, the two becomes the 20, 200, 2, 20, 200. Threw me off there. Right? So it's the idea that Bechor, who is the number two, if you like, expands the essence of the number one. So now, if it's... So now, if it's in very beautifully. First of all, why are we called B'nai Bechor Yisrael? Why are we called B'nai Bechor Yisrael? Because in the family of nations, we are our Kodesh Baruch Hu's Bechor. We are the ones who are going to be the ambassadors of our Kodesh Baruch Hu on this earth. We are the ones who are going to communicate the values of our Kodesh Baruch Hu to the rest of the world. We are the ambassador nation. And therefore, that's why we are referred to as B'nai Bechor Yisrael. Why is it in our tefillin? Because that's our role. We put on tefillin. And when we put on tefillin, Otis Shabbos Sephora, we put on our tefillin, we recognize, we understand that that's our role in this world. We bind ourselves to the role in this world. Now, interesting. Why was therefore Makkas Bechoras such a tremendous Makkah, apart from the fact that Paro himself was a Bechor? Because if you strike at the Bechor, you're striking at the transmission of culture. You're striking at the link that transmits culture. So you're really getting at the very, very heart of everything they stood by striking the Bechoras. I think it's a very interesting chat which gives an understanding of why Bechor. Why were the Bechorim supposed to be those who took the role in the Beis HaMikdash? The state says now, because since they have the lead role, they are primarily responsible for transmitting to the next generation. Therefore, they should have been the ones that were the Kohanim. They lost their position, understandably, when that role collapsed. They demonstrated the unworthiness for that particular role. Now, another beautiful story, let's say tonight. The whole of the Haggadah really revolves around, I mean, the essence of Maggid is these four Pesukim. These four Pesukim come from Bikurim. Come from Bikurim, the statement of Bikurim, the farmer of Bikurim. You wouldn't, if you were, it sounds like funny to say, if we were writing the Haggadah and looking for the ultimate structure of the Haggadah, probably we take from Mishmos, Ve'era, Boi, bit of a Shalach. Now, of course, all these other areas are cross-referenced when these Pesukim. But the structure is built around these Pesukim. So, the well-known idea, but I think it's worthwhile amplifying. Well-known idea is that Bikurim, of course, there's two things. First of all, Bikurim is a statement of Akoras HaTov. Bikurim is the shortest statement of Akoras HaTov. But two interesting observations of Akoras HaTov, which I think are important to bring out, especially if there's next generation around the table. Always important to mention Akoras HaTov. But, first of all, Akoras HaTov is not just about what you're receiving now. It's about what's got you to this place. Number one. And number two, So that's why Arami Ovidovia begins all the way very back. You know how I got here? I got here because of this. Cross Tov hasn't just done this for me now. There's a long-term connection, relationship with somebody else. Cross Tov has always got to be expressed for what's been done in the past as well. Number two, and it's a very beautiful idea, that really, this is, I don't know about you, but if you ever read a fiction book, there are some people who look at the end of the book first and find out what happens in the end. As a kid, I used to do that, look at the end of the book first, and then possibly ruin it for my sisters. That was also part of the, you know, fear of a brother, which I took very seriously. Anyway, in a way, over here, Arami Ovidovi, it's looking at the end of the book first. Why? Because we're looking at the statement of the farmer who's in Eretz Yisrael, who's brought his bikurim in the Eretz Zavas Cholot V'Dvash. And he's standing there in that end of it all, and he says, wow, look how far we've come. Look how far we've come. It's very beautiful how God is framed around the end of the story, the Geula, the redemption, that's Lachal, the Bracha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just, but I want to share with you a beautiful story about Akras HaTov, which I think amplifies this idea that Akras HaTov is not just a one-off, it's a long-term thing. It was actually brought in Mishpacha magazine, written by Reb Chaim Aryeh Ginsberg. Is that his name? I got that name right? Rabbi Ginsberg, we'll call him for short. Anyway, he writes in Mishpacha magazine quite regularly, very compelling writer. And he writes that when he was an American bocher coming from America there to Israel, his father said to him, you must go and see Rav Scheinberg. The family has a shaykh, so you've got to see Rav Scheinberg. So he goes to Rav Scheinberg, and as soon as he gets there, Rav Scheinberg says, what's your name? Says your name. Right, you're coming for Shabbos. Coming for Shabbos? Coming for Shabbos? I told this story recently at one of the secondary schools, not to a from crowd of teenagers. So I wanted to kind of give to them who Rav Scheinberg was. So I said to them, look, I know nothing about the celebrities in your world. Nothing. Sports, film, whatever. Tell me about some of your celebrities. They gave me names, didn't recognize any of the names. But I want to get the musig of a celebrity. So I'm going to tell you about a celebrity in the world in which I live in. And this man was a celebrity in the Torah world. An absolute celebrity. You can imagine this teenager being invited to the home of the celebrity. The celebrity, the absolute big number one celebrity. Not only did he get invited for Shabbos, he got invited as a regular. He came to Shtickle Ben Bryson in his house. And he himself became a Talmid Chacham. Wrote a Sefer and asked Rav Scheinberg for help in the Sefer. Rav Scheinberg spent an inordinate amount of time reviewing the Sefer, an inordinate amount of time. Went through the text, amended it, added to it, etc. Years and years later, it seems, after Rav Scheinberg was Nifter, so it seems, Rabbi Ginsberg met an Einar Kohn of Rav Scheinberg. And he said to him, you know, it's amazing that your grandfather gave me so much time. So he said with a bit of a smile, to be honest with you, we were surprised too. And I once had the, temerity to ask Zayda, why did you give this American bocher so much time? He looked at me like I was Meshuggah. He said, what do you mean? Do you know who he is? When I opened my first yeshiva in America, 50 years earlier, this, like all good yeshivas, we were short of money, and this man's grandmother had a local kosher bakery. And she supplied us with nutritious breakfast every morning for the bocherim so that we could have nutrition for nothing. For nothing. I shouldn't have a cross at all. This was 50 years earlier and two generations earlier. Two generations earlier. A cross at all isn't just about what happens now. Arami Ovidovi, we go all the way back. We remember it all the way through. That's why our lives are constantly referenced to Tzitzit Yisrael. Okay, I can see we're going to run out of time. I want to share with you one idea for younger children. As I said, on the other share, there's more ideas. But Mora God Zugil Ishkino. Mora God Zugil Ishkino. I wanted to express the idea of what did that mean, Gilad Shkina. So I printed out various pictures of Gedolei Yisrael, going back as far as you can find pictures, basically. So, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, Hadam Menachem Chaim, Rav Moshe Chaim, pictures of, if you can find, pictures of apparently the Vilna Gaon, Rashi, etc. So the idea is to say to them, could you imagine if Rav Moshe Sternbuch was coming to visit our house? What would that be like? How excited we would be? You know, and discuss with them. Could that be excitement? When the car draws up, would you be excited? Would you be nervous? If you came from Rav Chaim? Can you imagine the Rav Chaim coming to visit our house? And so you build up. Rashi comes to visit our house. And, Hillel comes to visit our house. Building well. And so you get it, and you do it through stages. And, you know, in the end, we'd be so. Can you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu is coming to visit our house? Just build it up in stages to build up the concept of what it meant. Try to start experience Gilui Shkina. at that level, here's what I've experienced, Kinder Schiller, and what they must have felt like, what must have been like. So it's very important, it's a beautiful way of dramatizing for children, bringing home to children what it meant that we were the nation experienced Kinder Schiller. Let's just, okay. Let's just, we're going to round off. Back to the Maccas. I say back to the Maccas because if you've had a good discussion, especially with those all around the table, about what Emunah really is, then at the points of Maccas, it's fascinating to discuss, based on the Rambam we mentioned before, and the Kli Yochor, which of the Maccas demolished which of the heresies in the tribe. The beginning of saying you identify, there were those who said there was no God. There were those who said there was a God, but he's lost interest in what goes down on down here. Those who say there's a God, he hasn't lost interest, but he can't do anything about what goes down here. Or he has no power whatsoever. So it's very interesting, first of all, to have a proper discussion, identify which Maccas demolished which heresy. The Kli Yochor points out which Maccas demolished which heresy. Kli Yochor points out which kafira. So there's a famous Ramban in the Parshas Bo, but Kli Yochor, also on Parshas Bo, he identifies that, he groups it this way. He says, in essence, there were three major heresies. There is no God, or there is a God, but he has no interest or ability down here in the minutiae, or there is another power as well. And he identifies that the Tzach, Adash Ba'achov, demolished each of those heresies. The Tzach demonstrated there is a God. First of all, they attacked the Nile. Secondly, the Gemara in Pesachim talks about the frogs were Moisin Nefesh. Frogs were Nefesh, clearly the frogs were paid service to a higher deity. And Kinim, even the Egyptians acknowledge Esav Elokim. So the first three says demonstrated there is a God, without any question there is a God. The second three, which are easier to identify, show that Hashem has got absolute control of what goes on down here. Orov Devash Kin. Orov Devash Kin, let's take for example Shkin. The dust was thrown up, dust, little specks of dust were flown up, and it floated across the whole of Mitzrayim, and not one speck landed on one knee. Right? But Achav is very interesting. That showed that there is no other power, because what two other powers, apart from the Nile, would they be interested in? Either the sun, we said the sun is a god, and the first of those plagues, all of those plagues, either obliterated the sun or took place at night, or the Tleh, Mazel Tleh. And this was month of Nisan, where Mazel Tleh is the Bechor. Tleh. Right? The Tleh is the Bechor, it's the first of the Maccas. The Kli Yochor calls it the Bechor HaMaccas. The Bechor HaMazalos, sorry. And therefore, the last three demonstrated there is no other power whatsoever. I'm going to leave you one final thought because it says finish by 9 o'clock. We've got 60 seconds. And that is as follows. Pesach Matzah Maror. The beautiful observation in Perik Yud Pasach Chavav of Shemois in the middle of the Makkah of Choshech when Moshe Rabbeinu is explaining what we need to go out with. And Paro is arguing. Moshe Rabbeinu says, we need to go out with we won't know Neda Ma'an over this Hashem Adonai Shom. We won't know what to take out with us. Says Rashi, Shem Yishon Yosef Mashi Yish B'Yadenu. Maybe we'll ask more than we have. That's a strange concept. Hashem only asks what we have, not more than we have. So I saw a beautiful article from someone from Leib Leibovitz. It says that on Pesach Matzah Morah, when it comes to Gula, Hashem asks for more than we have. When it comes to Gula, you've got to, as he puts it, sling your down your back and jump. When it comes to Gula, you've got to go beyond where you normally are to access Gula. Beautiful idea. That's what Gula is. Sometimes we can't see how we're going to move forward and how we're going to go forward, but Gula demands slinging down your back and get out. And in that respect, if we're ready for Gula and prepared to take that leap, you have to show the Zerchat of the Gula Shneim. Over the minutiae, over the details down here, because you can see all the gods.
What is
the? There is no other gods. There's no sun gods. There's no tzlech.
Why is a dash?
Because, first of all, our animals went everywhere. Not in the show. They stopped mummish at
Oh, yeah, Mitzvah.
Yeah, Deve, you had two animals standing side by side. One drops in, one goes up.
I think it's a month to get so. Thank you. on a Passover. We had to. It was a good idea for prayer.
Why did you know?
You need to believe.